The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds and otaku across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Welcome to the 48th episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast. Today, it's just Jonathan and I.
Hello.
We are going to be discussing things like animation. As you probably know by now,
that is something we're pretty passionate about.
Yeah, we both went to school for animation and video games. I went to school as a character animator and illustrator. Jonathan went for games.
Yeah, Nobody else really showed interest in the topic, so it just so happens that Andrew and I are the only ones on the podcast today, so we're the ones who... That's what we're going to talk about. It's something that we can put most of our knowledge into, and that's probably what today's going to be more about. It's going to be a very knowledgeable discussion rather than probably the stupid crap that we usually talk about.
You just called the rest of our cast stupid.
Yeah. So, we'll get into that in a little while. We'll explain why we got onto the topic of animation and what brought this up in the first place, but first we're gonna start off with some basic news stories.
News.
And it's not really basic. We actually have a lot of really interesting news today. It just so happens that when nobody's here, we have the most interesting news pieces to talk about. First up in media news, this is a little strange. It's not in strange news. We decided that we're not going to put it in the strange news.
Yeah, we couldn't really decide. It's kind of a weird blur. But so where it is strange, it is kind of more of a media set.
Yeah. Not only a couple days ago, well, actually a couple days ago from this recording, there was a news story about a Florida girl who burned down her house with her mother and brother.
Nine-year-old brother still inside with, like, the intention of hurting them slash killing them.
Yeah, from a fight that they had. Now, this is news related to our show because I guess what they connected it to was Soul Eater. Now,
connected. They said in the news story that it was connected through Soul Eater through a misinterpretation of Slender Man?
I don't know. I guess her diary was filled with Slender Man stories, and, you know, she was reading Soul Eater in some aspects. And
so
a lot of
the news stories are saying that she was on SoulEater.com, where she learned about the character, the Slender Man.
Extremely violent stories of...
Yeah, and Soul Eater being a story about killing people.
Yeah, this is a really big problem with media nowadays, is that they misinterpret, like, they try to go fishing for whatever they can get so that they can find something to blame. You know, there's got to be a scapegoat. No, what if this girl is just a little crazy? I mean, like, it's
crazy.
It's really sad to say, but I mean, like, she burnt down her house after she had a fight with her mom with the intention of hurting him. Burning down her house!
And now, the rest of the news story also includes the fact that when she burned down the house, she texted her mom immediately after she set the fire saying, "Oh my gosh, I don't know what I was thinking. Are you okay? Get out of the house."
Yeah, the girl was arrested for arson and two counts of attempted murder from Florida police, which is... It's crazy sad.
Yeah, it's a really sad story, but the fact that they're connecting it to Soul Eater for no reason at all is just weird. That's, like, the big problem is, like, can we not connect it to something in media and just say, hey, maybe there's something wrong with this girl?
Yeah, like, it's the blame video game scapegoat all over again. You know, it's media just trying to find things that...
Which, hopefully they'll find this girl help, but apparently she also said that, hey, I'd probably do this again, which is weird.
Yeah, that's a very strange thing to say. Definitely doesn't help your case. Anyways, that's really the only media news piece that we have, and it's weird that it happened in the U.S.
But sorry that it was a weird, sad story, kind of.
But let's move on to some gaming news. Yeah. We actually got quite a few gaming news pieces, and they're all very interesting. First off, we saw a tidbit news story that Splatoon on the Wii U, which is probably one of my favorite games that came out of E3.
Yeah, probably one of the most anticipated in 2015.
It was originally concepted as a Mario game. Yeah. Surprise!
Mario Sunshine, like a Mario Sunshine.
Oh, I think it was a follow-up to Mario Paint. Mario Paint 2.
Do, 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 do. Okay,
yeah, I think that that's what it should have been called. I mean, like, yeah, Mario Sunshine, but that was getting rid of ink, and this one would be putting it back. I don't know. I'm really happy that they went with the squid thing, because...
Oh, yeah, no, this is so much better.
Character designs are original, they're creative, it gives the entire game a new perspective. The game would have been just as fun, and as many people would have bought it if it was a Mario game, but I'm glad that they went with an original concept, because...
I don't know, actually. I would definitely not be as interested in this if it was a Mario game.
You think so? I mean,
well, because we've seen Mario before. Like,
yeah, we've seen Mario, but we've never seen this game before. It's a completely new original game.
It is, but I would much rather play a new IP than just another Mario game.
It's true. I mean, it gives the more creative licensing to be able to do things that aren't just Mario characters. Instead, they created these cute squid characters, which I am highly, like, I'm very happy with the concept.
Oh, yeah, the designs are awesome.
But, I mean, it would have been, I think it would have been just as successful with a Mario title to it.
I don't know. I disagree.
I think that people would have lost it if it was Mario Paint. Honestly, yeah, I think it would have been. Okay, next up in gaming news, we have the announcement of a new 3DS model.
Yeah, you guys have probably already heard about this, seeing that this is 2 weeks old, but the new 3DS model that's coming out is this weird new design. It's a little bit bigger. Like, okay, so they're still making the XL and the regular sizes in both these new models. But even...
Really? I thought it was only XL.
No. Believe it or not, the mini one has more features to it. Like, you can take the shell off of the smaller one and put, like, new shells onto... So you don't have to get, like, those decals, like, sticky decals that you stick all over your old 3DS.
I like the sticky decals.
I do, too. But apparently the larger one doesn't have that yet. It just has exclusive casing. Like, they have a Monster Hunter 4 one coming out.
Yeah, but probably makes it really bulky.
But they also have Monster Hunter 4 skins that you can pop off and pop on to the new one that's coming out.
Okay, so here's the thing about the new 3DS is they added everything that should have been on it in the first place. Now, it's kind of like a Mac approach where they kind of release a first model broken and then they come up with a new design.
But it's more like... 5 years later. Then.
Yeah, I mean, there's like three models of a 3DS now, I know. But I mean, if you think about it, like, they're adding a C stick, which was on both the Nintendo 64 controller and the Nintendo GameCube controller, you know, so that you can look around the environment instead of, like, in Monster Hunter, you have to hold down another button and then use it, so you can't run around while looking. It's...
No, that's not true. You can use the D-pad.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's...
I got used to it real fast, so I really had no problem. But I've heard that I am also the only person that has never that plays Monster Hunter 3 without the C-pad.
Yeah,
it's with the Circle Pad Pro.
Yeah, without that attachment that created this new model. So this new model is going to come with that. Plus, they're going to add all the other buttons that were on the GameCube controller. So yeah, there's going to be like four or five more buttons.
Yeah, they added two more shoulder buttons. And they moved around some of the buttons, like the power button, and they still have the D-pad and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So they... I'm hoping... This is what I'm hoping, because I really like this model, and I kind of want this model. However, I already have a 3DS. So what's the issue here? I'm hoping that there's going to be some sort of trade-in program, you know, maybe at a GameStop or whatever, what have you. I don't know what your theology is on how you like GameStop or whatever, but... But if they have, like, bring it up at GameStop, hey, trade in your 3DS and you can get an upgrade for the new 3DS for like $50 or something like that. You know, maybe that would be cool. But
which would be cool, because I still have $50 of GameStop. See, okay, so I've been hoarding my GameStop gift cards in hopes that it would go towards a Wii U. But now that the new 3DS is coming out, 3DS kind of takes priority with me.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, there's going to be games that are coming out now that are only functioning on this new one, or it makes it a lot easier, most likely.
Yeah, no, it does.
The other issue, though, with this trade-in idea, you know, that we have is, where does all your old data go? Are they going to be able to transfer over your data for you as well, or are they going to, I mean, it's funny because this is a hypothetical situation, so maybe they're not even going to do it, we don't know, but... Like, what about your Miis, and what about your downloaded content? You know, it's...
Yeah, you, supposedly, yes, you will be able to transfer all your data over to your new system as long as you have both the systems.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna... as long as you have both the systems. So you can't trade it in and get your
new you have to get the new system first, then you would have to trade it in.
Yeah.
And...
I can imagine a lot of people sitting in GameStop buying the new one... transferring their data with their old 3DS and then trading in their old 3DS. The only problem is you only get store credit that
way. Now, and another thing is, too, well, then I would put it towards a Wii U. Then the other thing is you can't just take out your SD card from your 3DS and put it into the new one, because the new 3DS is running off of micro SD cards.
What?
Not the standard SD card.
Oh, see now, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I bought a 32-gigabyte SD card so that I would never need another SD card for my 3DS again.
And now you need it.
And I didn't even fill it up yet.
Yeah, well you'd never fill it up. I mean, like...
Well, but that's the thing. Nintendo runs all their data like they did in the old days, where all the data was saved on the cartridges.
Yeah, so you don't even need
You don't even need the card. You just need that for your system data and anything you download off the eShop, which I have Fire Emblem off the eShop. But you can just go onto the eShop and re-download it.
Yeah, you can.
Because I've already bought it, and it knows I already bought it. Like, that's just... So it really doesn't matter.
So next up in gaming news, this one... Okay, so check it out. This is interesting, and you guys probably know about this one by now. Pokemon Cross Tekken. It is a Pokemon fighting game, and it's not like turn-based, like a regular Pokemon game, like Pokemon Stadium, which was awesome. but like, it's like fighting legitimate Tekken style beat 'em up combos and super awesomeness.
And just so you guys know, Tekken is my jam. And I've actually, you know, I've fought Tekken in tournaments, so I'm all about this.
Yeah, beat all you fools.
probably not.
Probably not. I get my
I
butt
did. I did. I beat some people online recently, though. I jumped on some Tekken Tag 2, and I actually won. I was like, what? This is crazy. No, I guess I am pretty good at Tekken.
No one cares, really. I don't think so.
What?
No one cares about your fight record.
But I won.
So, Pokken, what we got so far is Lucario and...
Yeah, it showed Lucario and Machamp.
Yeah, Machamp, that's right. Yeah, I would play as Machamp.
Yeah, you would. I would play as Lucario.
I play as Paul Phoenix in the original Tekken, so I'm always like the heavy hitter style kind of guy, you know? So
Asuka's my character.
Yeah, so you need something a little bit more...
Lighter. I don't know.
I don't even know what Pokemon you would use in a fighting game.
Yeah, I mean,
who would your Pokemon fighting character be? That there we go.
Well, believe it or not, in X and Y, like I got like this. When Lucario showed up, I was like, oh man, Lucario, this is gonna be lame. Like, I don't want a Lucario. And then I was like, holy crap, I like Lucario, so I'd probably fight as Lucario.
Oh, what about what's the panda one? Pancham.
Pancham?
Yeah, Pancham. I would totally play as Pancham.
Well, I'd play as Froakie, because Froakie's my favorite.
Well, yeah, if they have Froakie, I mean, he'd probably play like Raven from Tekken, which is like impossible.
Oh yeah, well, but the thing is, well, and that's another thing. When they announced Froakie for new Smash, I was like, I guess I'm playing as Froakie.
Yeah, which is another thing. Back to the 3DS, what the heck are we gonna? What 3DS are we gonna play?
When you just get the new system, you just put.
You'll use the cartridge.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that because it's being developed now. Both Monster Hunter 4 and Super Smash Brothers will work on the old 3DS.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because that's what they were all demoed on at E3 and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So that's probably the system that they're going to work on, but they're going to be beneficial if you get the new systems. Fun fact, I named my Froakie JoJo in X and Y.
Surprise! I don't think that any of my, like, any Pokemon that I actually use in Pokemon are ever going to show up in Pokken, because, I mean, I'm a bug trainer, so I highly doubt that we're going to see Butterfree mashing up mad combos in Pokken.
Yeah, I guess. The only one that, like, is kind of weird like that is Torchic, because Torchic turns into,
Well, Scyther. I'm sure that there would be
a Scyther. No, I'm talking about, like, the little bird thing.
Yeah,
like, he's, like, the only little bird that actually turns into, like, a martial arts, like, anthropomorphic character. So, like, maybe they'll, like, take Butterfree and, like, turn him into, like, an anthropomorphic
character. Oh my gosh, that would be so strange.
It would be so weird.
What if Diglett was a character? Like, if like, you had a little Diglett just, like, moving through the ground. In related news, speaking of Tekken, the director of Tekken, Katsuhiro Harada, announced at the latest Sony conference a new Project Morpheus game.
Yeah.
See, now this is interesting because he's a part of it, and it's not a fighting game, which is what he's really known for. See, what he's doing is he's creating, or he's on the project of this game called Summer Lessons. And what it is, it's basically just a virtual reality thing where you're sitting in a room with either a male or female. The demo showed a female, but I don't know. But there's supposed to be multiple characters. And you can sit in the room with the character and do summer lessons with them. It's a slice of life game. And I don't know whether or not would it be considered an educational game?
Well, I don't know if you're actually supposed to, because is it like you're sitting with a tutor as a moe thing, or are you sitting with the tutor as like an actual learning
program?
It is
an anime style game. Yeah. So, I mean, like it you see Asian, it's more Asian influenced. You can see the Japanese features in the characters, but I mean, it's still a little anime when you look at it. But,
See, because I wonder if it's just, like, choosing your voice set on a GPS.
Yeah.
So, like, you're playing the game to learn things, but the tutor that you choose is just your GPS voice.
Right. yeah. I don't know. I saw some, if you go online, I'll put the link in the description, you can actually see the influence to how the game plays, where you, when you're wearing the headset, you know, you have full range of motion over the entire screen. One of the interesting things about the game is that they really wanted to push the realism on it. So the system is in 1080p, and the screen, I guess, is a little bit larger. So it's not like the goggles, it's like a full screen.
Well, that's kind of weird.
And the way that it works is that it has your full range of motion, so the goal is to legitimately trick your brain into not being able to tell what is and is not reality. Now, when people were trying out the Summer Lessons game, the girl gets really close to you at sometimes, like the character that you're learning with gets really close to you at some points, and people were saying that like they were actually feeling like when her face got close, you know, their heart started beating, you know, like a little bit closer, because it's kind of like, oh, this is exciting, you know. So I don't know, like, if this game is supposed to be kind of like to find a new way to pull at your emotions.
Hot for teacher.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, is PS4 going to start making porn games before Oculus Rift?
Well, not before Oculus Rift.
There was a shot where somebody was trying to look underneath her skirt, and she like tried to, she held her clothes back.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, there was in the demo.
Oh man, so this is totally a MOE game if they allow you to do that.
Because
otherwise they wouldn't go ahead and do that.
Well, I don't know, because if you have 100% full range of motion on this device, then obviously you can look wherever you want to in this environment, you know? So, I mean, if you have the actual capability of lying down on the floor and looking up her skirt, you know, they have to come up with a way. Well, I guess they don't have to. You could probably just do it, you know? But, like, they decided to come up with a way to stop that from happening.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I wonder how much control you have over the environment in this, whether or not it plays out as just an event, or if...
So is this, like, a wireless system that you can, like, walk around with?
I don't really know.
Is that, like, because what makes it different than the new Oculus Rift, new 1080p Oculus Rift?
I don't really know. That there haven't really been too many details that I've seen anyways. Anybody who's listening, if you know of anything, just definitely send us some Project Morpheus stuff, because I'm really interested.
Yeah, and the thing is, at this point, I'm just super happy that multiple companies are interested in virtual reality. Because now there's going to be competitors. Like, Oculus Rift was first, but now Morpheus is its competitor. I wonder which one's going to win.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't wait to see the third-party virtual reality ones that are basically just going to be, like, a backstep to the Virtual Boy.
Well, that's what I was like. I was going to ask, is this game Virtual Boy compatible?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, like, red dots all over the screen. I'm blind!
This is so uncomfortable for my eyes.
Ah!
Okay.
So that's it for gaming news. It's time to move on to some strange news.
Yay!
Yeah, ooh, strange. Brr.
Now it's only two of us here.
Yeah. First up in strange news, there are some... This is coming out because it is Colonel Sanders' birthday. Happy birthday, Colonel Sanders.
Happy birthday, Colonel Sanders.
Okay, so we're talking about some new products that are coming out that are KFC related. Now, we have a lot of computer equipment in Japan that's coming out, and we also have jewelry. So, I don't know if your girlfriend has ever shown any interest in some chicken wing earrings, but they are giving out 47 pairs in a contest. And also, along with that, they're putting on the market some KFC keyboards. Their keyboards, mouse, and flash drives are all that. I mean, the flash drive is humongous. It's the size of an actual chicken wing, or a drumstick too. And it's a full-on chicken wing. And then there's also
so is the mouse.
Yeah, a drumstick mouse, which seems greasy.
That'd be so gross.
And I don't know. I would totally want that. I mean, not if it was greasy, obviously, but
just a chicken
just
wing
a
mouse or a drumstick mouse.
Yeah, right? It sounds like the coolest thing. Like it just the goofiest.
Oh yeah,
thing.
You'd be so cool.
I would. I would be the talk of the town. Did you hear about the drumstick mouse pad that he has? Or
no, but yeah, mouse, like not mouse pad, mouse.
Yeah.
Oh, what if they made like the boob mouse pads, but it's like
but it's chicken. So. Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. It's just like the Colonel Sanders holding a chicken and drumstick,
like in perspective.
Yeah. That would be sweet. Or we could get a mouse pad with Colonel Sanders butt cheeks. And then also, lastly, there's the keyboard, which is it's an American style keyboard, and they're all. Everything on the keypad is, like, there's no symbols on it or anything like that. It's just chicken. Like, just different shapes of chicken for the keypad, except for the K, the F, and the C button, which are actually KFC. And then there's also a Colonel Sanders figure that comes with it, and there's a bucket on the top, which I think is where the, like, the wireless receiver is for it. It's so goofy.
It is. It's really kind of nutty.
Such a weird gift.
But those the Japanese really do love their KFC.
Yeah.
I am okay with that because I too love my KFC.
I want to try Japanese KFC.
I like the chicken snackers, and I want to know if they have the chicken snackers in Japan because that's what I would get. Like, I don't really like the. I mean, I like it, but it's just so greasy and it makes me sick. Like the drumsticks and stuff like that. So
it's greasy.
So I like the snackers. The sauce is so good.
Yeah. All right, so off of KFC, you guys have probably heard this next story. It's been everywhere if you're in any kind of Japanese or otaku-related media. You've probably heard of the JAV idols allowing fans to squeeze their boobs for AIDS awareness.
Yep. It was kind of like a telethon.
Live streamed.
Yeah, and it was weird. I don't know what to think about that. Like, I mean, it's cool, but, like, I understand, like, like AIDS awareness and stuff like that, but you're letting somebody walk up and touch your chest, like...
It's morally wrong. I mean, I'll agree with that. It's definitely morally, but I mean, they're porn stars. But I mean, like, I can't even imagine, like, what... Japanese people are weird. Like, the people who went...
That's what I mean, like, the crowd. What, like, the kind of crowd that they brought in to, like, actually get, like, this kind of AIDS awareness done. Now, granted, I mean... Some of the JAV idols are really attractive, and, I mean, like, the kind of chance that is, like, wouldn't you pay, like, lots of money to just give it a shot? And then,
Yeah, they're a little bit different than you know, porn stars in America. They're all natural down in Japan.
Most of them are, yeah.
Not for the most part,
all of them, but I think all these ones were. But... Oh, it's weird. I don't know. It's just so interesting. Like, that is definitely one way that you can get money for a charity and raise awareness for something is like,
it's
do you want to see something naked? and touch it? Well, then here's
donate to AIDS awareness. Yeah. I feel like a really creepy audience showed up, though.
I don't know. And another thing that they did, too, is they didn't just have, like, the boob-squeezing thing, like down the line. They also had, like, the JV stars were, like, playing games. And they had a giant rubber pool, like, a blow-up pool. And, like, you know, they were all dressed in bikinis and whatnot. And they had to catch an eel in the pool. So, like, they're all in the pool and they're all jumping out, like, oh, that's gross! And, like, you know, trying to catch the eel, and
that actually sounds like fun.
Yeah, but like watching it, like it was just like, yeah, okay, that moed es, you know,
moed es. So that happened. Actually, you know what? I didn't even realize. I didn't look up to see whether or not there was any money raised or how much money was raised. Let's see. Oh yeah, this is a cool story. Japanese Batman, Chi Batman.
Yeah, Chi Batman. Oh man, and this isn't even really a strange news story. This is really, really, really cool
and kind of heartwarming.
Yeah. So, in the city of Chiba, there is the infamous Chi Batman.
I love the name, by the way.
Yeah, a 41-year-old Japanese welder.
That's the only details he gives. The rest of his identity is secret.
He has a secret identity, but that's the only thing he'll publicly give, is that's what he does. He rides around Chiba as Chi Batman on his custom Batmobile tri-bike.
Yeah, Batpod.
And he just basically does it to watch people smile.
Yeah.
Because he said
that... He's been doing it for 3 years, ever since the earthquakes.
Yeah, he said, since the great earthquakes, there has been a lack of smiling. And the reason why he started Chi Batman was to make people smile. And I saw it. I was like, dude, that guy is a hero. Like, aww. That. Yeah, like, that guy is the man. Like, that is...
Collective awe from Bob's Burgers.
Yeah. Aww. Oh, man. That is, like... when I read, I was like, dude, that guy's awesome. So, I don't know. That's about... Yeah.
That is a hero, man.
Making people smile. Like, he's literally doing it just to make people smile.
Have you seen the news story for it where he's doing the Batman voice?
Yeah. And then... So, link in the description, but he actually also talks in the Batman voice, but he's doing it in Japanese, which is fantastic! So...
Yeah, it's awesome.
He's such a pleasure to listen to, and, like, what he says is so virtuous and so good. Ah! Give it a shot.
Chi Batman makes me happy.
Check out Chi Batman.
And lastly, this is probably the strangest news that we've probably heard all month.
Which, didn't we talk about this on Evan's podcast?
We did talk about it on Evan's podcast. So if you heard...
Last week.
If you heard Evan's podcast, then you already heard us talk about it. But Hello Kitty is not a cat. What?
What?
Okay, so the creator of Hello Kitty, it seems that somebody was interviewing him for some sort of... article or project or something like that, and it came up saying that, you know, Hello Kitty, asking about Hello Kitty being a cat, and the creator said, Hello Kitty's not a cat. What the hell's the matter with you? No, he said that, well, kind of, actually, it kind of sparked this whole thing that, like, I cannot believe Hello Kitty has been around for this long, and this has never been addressed, people. I mean, like, what? It's never been addressed that Hello Kitty's not a cat?
But, and the weird thing is that what he said was that she's an anthropomorphic character, so she's like an anthropomorphic cat.
Yeah.
So she's a cat.
Yeah, well, but she owns a cat. This is kind of going back to the...
Oh, that's true. Like, it is going back to, like, the Disney thing of, like, well, why is Goofy a dog, but Pluto's a dog, too?
Yeah.
Like, is Pluto just a stupid dog, and therefore he's a pet? Which brings up so many different moral questions, of owning things as pets, and... Ugh.
There's so much controversy going on here now. But I just think it's kind of weird that it was this taboo. Like, the creator was, like, taken aback by it. It's just like, wait, what are you talking about?
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I don't know. And this was the first time... See, this is common knowledge, but this is the first time I heard about it, that Hello Kitty's also from London, England. She's British. She's not even Japanese. Well, she might be Japanese, but she's from London, England. I don't know. That was a weird thing for me, too.
I don't know. It's Hello Kitty's a cat. I mean, what's he talking about? She's not a cat. She's an anthropomorphic cat. So she's a cat. She just walks on two legs.
So she's a cat girl, or she's somebody in a fursuit. We said that on
the we mentioned that she might be wearing a suit, but I don't think she is. I don't. You guys said no. That's not that what that was.
You guys. Who's you guys?
You and Evan.
Oh, I don't know.
Because that's what I brought up. I was like, well, is she a person in a suit then?
I've slept on that. But there's other. Now I don't know.
Because there's other animal characters in her show, or whatever she is. Or
well, maybe then the Hello Kitty universe is just a fursona convention.
I don't know.
That's as strange as it gets. Seriously, guys, I was totally thrown off by this. That is as strange as it gets right there. What are you talking about, Hello Kitty? All right, so it's time to move on to what we're watching.
All right, guys, so we are actually watching, we kind of picked into a few new things, we got a recommendation from one of our fans in an email that we got. Believe it or not, this should belong in fan service, but also it leads into what we're watching. Our fan, Scott, who sent us this recommendation for short animes from that episode that we were talking about short animes on a discussion, and said you should check out Cheese Sweet Home because it's about a kitten. Like, it's an anime about a kitten. Each episode is only 3 minutes long, and that's including the intro to the show, which is only 25 seconds long. So
and that's as short as it gets.
So I was watching Cheese Sweet Home, and I would sit there, and you know, it's on Crunchyroll, so you just sit there and let it scroll through the entire playlist, and it has four seasons, 26 episodes each.
Bob Burger Collective, aw.
Yeah, it's basically, and I was watching the first four episodes, and like within the first four episodes, I was like, this is kind of sad, like because they're like talking about like getting rid of the cat because they can't have her in the apartment building that they're living in, but they keep her anyway, and she can't go outside, and like she's really sad that she can't go outside. It's funny because she's a cat, so you can't understand her, but you have like the collective cat thoughts going on.
Oh, kind of like Garfield.
Yeah. So every time it's like from the human perspective, it's like these little mews, but like from her perspective, she's talking.
Does she like lasagna too?
No, not yet. I've only watched so much.
Does she hate Mondays?
But it's weird because she doesn't understand anything that's going on. It's almost like she doesn't even care about the human characters in the show. Like, she's just interested in what she wants to do, and the human characters are just there to observe. The human characters are absolutely in love with Chi, and they love Chi, but she's just like, I don't know what's going on, I'm a cat.
Like, yeah, it's like a real cat. Exactly like a real cat.
So there was one episode where the boy was sad, because he found out that his parents were going to give away Chi. He's only, like, I don't know, 5'4". Like, really, really young child character. And she's like, what's going on? Why are you sad? I don't know what's going on. Oh, look, a bird! And chases it away. And then it's like, oh, where's my cat going? Oh, no! And then, like, he's crying real sad, and his parents feel awful. And I was just like, this is so sad! And then the cat comes back and be like, oh, the bird got away. Why are you crying? I don't understand. I was like, Chi! Ah! Like, they're trying to give you away!
Plastic bag.
So I was watching Chi and I really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Chi Sweet Home. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scott.
And I've actually been watching this during the past couple episodes of the Wicked Anime Podcast, and I wanted to hold it secret so that we could keep it for this discussion, because it's going to transition into our animation topic. I've been watching Ruby. Yep. Okay, so a lot of our fans have watched Ruby, and they've been telling us to watch it. Even our fan Gerardo, he's been telling us that we should watch it for our short animes, which is in relation to exactly what Andrew was talking about. He was talking we should watch Ruby, and this is why I watched it, was because it was short. And every episode, at least in the first volume, is between like 4 minutes and 12 minutes long. The second volume gets into consistent 12-minute episodes, which is great because it's still short. Ruby's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Let me preface what I'm about to say and going into our Tapagotchi with that. Ruby is awesome. Everybody should watch Ruby. The characters are great, especially Ruby. She's adorable.
It has great design, great writing. Great direction.
Feels like an anime.
It does feel like an anime, which is kind of cool. I feel like they kind of went like ahead with the tropes, like they were just copying anime. Like they didn't like have enough to kind of make their own anime. They felt like they had to copy anime, which I didn't think was necessary. But it really doesn't matter because I thought it was still really well done.
The world they made is okay. You know, I like the whole feud between the animal people and the humans and the White Fang and everything like that. Weapon designs are awesome. I mean, like, almost every weapon in the show is over the top. There's some sort of, you know, strange weapon. Like, Ruby has a scythe that's also a sniper rifle.
And it shouldn't even work that way.
Yeah, you know?
That's the thing. That's another thing about design, is it's a good thing that this is an independent show, because if you had real lead designers behind the show, they would just say, no, that does not work, it doesn't make any sense, don't do that.
Yeah, it's almost weird because it makes it seem like something like Kill la Kill is more practical when you say it like that. But, you know, you have characters who, like Yang, Ruby's sister, who's the yellow in Ruby, RWBY, red, white, blue, yellow.
Black.
Black, oh my gosh, yeah, Blake. Blake is the black color. I'm gonna get back on track. Like, her weapon is gauntlets. Like, she's just a fist fighter. Gauntlets with shotgun shells in them.
That was my idea. They totally stole that from me.
Yeah, and she would just explode her hands with every shot that she would take. You know, and it's weird. It's weird because it's one of the things that I have trouble figuring out is whether or not characters actually have superpowers, because Ruby actually has like super speed, and there are parts where she like shoots her gun scythe, you know, to make herself go faster. But then there are also times where she just like goes fast.
Yeah, where she just dashes around and jumps really high.
Yeah,
is that ever explained?
Not yet. At least not really. I think they're getting to it, honestly. Okay. Honestly, I do think that they're getting to it, because there is magic and stuff in this show, so there are ways to explain things. And Yang, she has this issue where, like, whenever she gets super mad, her eyes turn red and she gets all super powered and stuff.
Berserker
like that.
Mode.
Yeah, she does. She has berserker mode, you know. And then there's Weiss, who's the white character. I'm not white power,
but not Caucasian. Yeah. She's white.
Yeah, like,
she's the shade white.
They call her the Ice Queen. she uses dust, which is the magical like and power thing that
kind of fuels that
kind
this
of
world.
Yeah, it kind of powers the entire universe. And her character is like the heiress to the company that manufactures all of the dust in the world, which kind of sounds like a drug cartel when you talk about it like that. But it's not. It's magic. It's not drugs, it's magic.
It's not drugs, it's magic. Okay. Tell that to every meth user in the world, meth addict. It's not drugs, it's magic.
No, don't tell that to them. They'll tell that to you.
Yeah.
And they'll scratch a lot. Should get back onto Ruby. So, the reason why we wanted to connect this with the animation topic, Monty Oom.
No, well, not just Monty Oom. Because this can be tied into anime in general, as far as what we're going to talk about.
It can. And I've had this issue for years.
Yes, if you guys aren't familiar with Monty... Now, Monty Oom, if you're listening to this, please do not take this as attack. Like, we are critiquing you, we come from the professional world, we've worked on animations ourselves, we've worked in studios, all different kinds of things. This is just coming from a professional standpoint... of what you're doing, because you are a fantastic director, like, or the direction you're taking with Ruby. I know you're the director, the creator, the writer. It's all really, really well done. The one thing that we've had a problem with since being introduced to your work is your animation, and here's why. There are 12 steps of animation, and we know you're self-taught. And self-teaching can come from a bunch of different things. You don't have money to go to school. You haven't learned in the proper places, because there are places to learn animation and all different kinds of animation, but you have to, you know, it's a practice that has to be fleshed out and
because
here's the thing. Self-teaching animation and learning it the wrong way is very damaging, in the fact that, kind of like how when people want to start learning music and they don't learn, how to read music,
they learn tabs.
Playing tabs is like being illiterate. Like, it's like reading a book while being illiterate. And it's the same thing with animation. If you're self-taught but you don't know the 12 principles of animation, it's like animation illiteracy. And a lot of the thing, and here's another thing. I'm gonna start this right now. Is Ruby is done entirely in Poser, which is not an animation program.
It's not an animation program.
So that certainly attributes to the animation
to a challenge.
And I feel like that Ruby is done with the best, you know, the best of what they got. You're not even supposed to animate in Poser. So the fact that you can get anything done is amazing. But you know, when the characters are moving in Ruby, their hands are stiff. Like, their hands are always in one motion. There's no like flow to any of it. It's the animation is very floaty. The animation is very stiff. There's a lot of sliding that happens.
We're gonna get into this when we start talking our Tamagotchi,
this is the Tamagotchi.
Yeah, but what we're gonna do is we're gonna introduce everybody who may not be in the animation world to the 12 principles of animation and how it
I don't know how it relates to anime.
Yeah, how it relates to anime in general.
The only thing that spiked this was Ruby, because Monty Um has had a long history of being having internet fame for his animations. He started with Dead Fantasy, and I gotta say, man, I have never been a fan of Dead Fantasy because I cannot get past the animation.
Which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's the problem. See, Ruby has so many good things going for it. It has great writing, great characters, great world, everything like that. Dead Fantasy, and then the one that he started with which was Metroid versus Halo, which got him his internet fame, all about the animation and action only.
And same with if you've seen Screw Attack. On Screw Attack, when they had the Goku versus Superman, he also animated that.
And it's not.
Oh, it's
hard to watch.
Yeah, I hope we're not getting too destructive with our criticism, because we're going to try to be constructive. Because that's how you're supposed to critique. We're gonna start going through the 12 principles of animation. Monty Um was only the spike for this topic.
Correct.
We're not gonna bash Monty Um, because I don't want to bash Monty Um, because I think he does a great job with what he has in front of him.
Yeah.
He should definitely continue to learn, though. Is the thing. He still has a lot to learn before his animation is perfect and great.
Like the great Disney animators that we have, and even some Japanese animators.
Yeah, so
the 12 principles of animation, they go through mainly 2D. So it applies. We had to learn it when we went through school because we were learning 3D at the time. The 12 principles of animation are applied to 2D, but it also is key to learning 3D as well.
Yeah, if you know 3D, 3D and 2D translate one and like hand in hand. They're the same thing.
Which may or may not be why the animation in, say, something like Ruby is not as success or not as clean as it could be, is because when they tried to translate, you know, 2D anime animation into 3D, you have that smooth motion that you don't get with drawn pictures.
I don't know. It's been done before. It has been done before, so...
Well, we've always talked about how Japanese 3D is a little shaky to begin
with.
Yeah,
but this isn't Japanese 3D.
But even still, if they're taking influence from anime, then, you know, they... Still,
I don't know. That's a weird gray area. All I know is that I learned 2D aspects and we applied them to 3D. And so we're going to go through we're going to actually teach you the 12 principles of animation.
This is one of my most favorite things on planet Earth. You guys know how much, or you may or may not know, how much I love animation. It is one of my driving passions and why I love doing something like our show so much.
Yeah, and for me personally, the reason why I decided to go into anime, I actually went to school originally to be an illustrator, or actually a concept artist, but that option wasn't there for me by the time I got the end, so I became an animator. When I started animation, I basically was inspired by Teen Titans. When Teen Titans came out in 2000, and Teen Titans was my aha moment of this is what I want to do. And I've loved cartoons forever. I've been watching them ever since a kid. Obviously, I still watch them. If there's one thing I know better than anime, it's Western animation. I've worked with many different animators. I've worked in a couple different studios.
on a whole different kinds of different projects. I've worked on games. I've worked on web series.
I'm going to say it so Andrew doesn't have to feel like he's putting himself up on a pedestal. He's learned from three different Disney animators.
Yes, I know a bunch of different Disney animators, which is interesting.
Interesting
and
about me.
If you want to know something interesting about me, that's a little bit of trivia. Anyway.
Let's start.
Let's begin with the 12 principles of animation. Squash and stretch.
First one is probably one of the biggest ones that you see in something like Looney Tunes and, of course, Tex Avery.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I love Tex Avery.
I was going to say that the same exact thing was when you think of squash and stretch, the first thing I think of is Tex Avery.
If you don't know who Tex Avery is, he made all those wolf cartoons where, like, he sees the pretty girl and his eyes bug out and aruga and
Tex Avery is one of the definite... still animators that just does nothing but make me laugh. I love every single Tex Avery cartoon.
Yeah, he does Droopy. He does Droopy Dog.
Well, and he also does those invention ones, like The World of Tomorrow, where he showcases different weird, horrible inventions of the future. Ah! He makes me laugh. He's
so
funny. See,
you can already hear the passion, guys, of how much we love talking about animation. We could talk about it for days.
Yeah, which is interesting why we even, you know, got into the anime.
One of the first things that you learn, it's your first lesson ever in animation, is the bouncing ball.
Yeah.
And what that is the project where you just make a ball bounce up and down in a consistent motion, and if you don't change the shape of the ball, it doesn't read realistic. So what you have to do is, when it falls down, to make it look like it's going fast, you have to stretch it out so that it looks like it's dropping at a speed, and when it hits the ground, it squashes so it looks like it's actually hitting the ground with some force.
Yeah, so, and
giving it weight.
And believe it or not, what we're talking about are other principles of animation. So we'll get to that later. And even though we mentioned Tex Avery, Tex Avery has another big principle that he always used, which was exaggeration. So we'll get to that later.
Yep.
So squash and stretch is you know, the flattening and stretching of specific objects. And that doesn't mean the physical stretching and the physical squashing, because squash and stretch can also apply to realistic characters that bend down all the way and then stretch all the way up, like if when they're jumping.
Second one is anticipation. And, okay, so here's anticipation. It's kind of a lost art. Because if you look at some of the famous shows that are out right now, like anything on Adult Swim that is done in Flash, some of them have it, not all of them do. The biggest offender is Family Guy. Family Guy does not use anticipation. Or the older episodes don't. Newer ones kind of do, but the older ones don't. See,
well,
the...
and it also goes back to the early days of Hanna-Barbera, where they didn't have that budget. Like, it was kind of during, like, a Great Depression of animation, even probably during the Great Depression, I don't remember anymore, but they didn't have the budget to do those kinds of things, so Hanna-Barbera would create cycles, animation cycles. Yeah. Like, think of the Flintstones. Every scene would start with the characters already walking. Like, they wouldn't show them begin to start walking. They would just already be walking.
Yeah, and if you notice also, like, say, for Flintstones example, again, whenever they start moving their car, they have to run their feet. Well, they don't move their upper bodies because their feet have so little frames of animation that it would be impossible to move their upper body in any way.
So, and another good example is the Pink Panther. When the Pink Panther was around, it was missing a couple frames of animation as well, and they cut out the anticipation. And this applies to anime all over, because anime uses talking heads like crazy.
Yeah.
And they do not anticipate anything, which is really interesting.
One of the ones the most recent things that I noticed does use some very good anticipation was Sailor Moon, where they use it in the transformation sequences. They put a lot of time into that.
And, studios like Gainax and directors like Hiroyuki Imashi, when they're creating their action scenes, they put all that stuff into it, you know, anticipation and all those kinds of things. But when people are just having a general conversation, to make it cheaper, it just making the talking head makes it a lot easier. Otherwise, they really don't move that much.
To put into perspective what anticipation is for all of you people who don't know,
we
kind of skipped over that. Let's say, for example, you're going to punch somebody. When you punch somebody, you have to bring your hand back
before you throw it forward.
Anticipation of motion in words, instead of using a physical example in a text, like in a textbook example, is telegraphing what they're going to do next before you do it.
You have to move back before you can move forward.
Yeah, so you basically, it's a subtle, sometimes you don't even see it happen.
Yeah.
But it's a hint for your brain what the character is about to do. So if somebody's going to run or start walking forward, they'll kind of lean back a little bit and then move forward and start walking.
Yeah, let's do an exercise. Everybody who's listening, if you're sitting down, stand up. What do? You put your hands on your thighs and you push up. Putting your hands on your thighs is the anticipation.
Well, and so is
and leaning forward.
The leaning down. Yeah, because you want to lean down, you
have to
down
go down to go up. Up.
So
anticipation. Oh, this is so much fun. I hope you guys are having as much fun as we are, because we're almost like teaching.
Okay, staging is the next and this one should be probably one of the most obvious. Staging has everything to do with theater and film and how things are portrayed in a shot.
Yeah, if this also takes place, if it applies to photographers as well. You know the rule of thirds, how there are quadrants in a frame. You have to set them up in an interesting way in order to make a frame look like a good shot. It's all about camera angles and all that kind of interesting stuff.
Bringing interest into your shot brings interest into the whole aspect of animation. So if you have a really, really nicely done animation, but your staging is just awful, your brain will be like, whoa, I don't get this. Like,
yeah. So if you're filming something completely flat in 2D, then like...
Wes Anderson. Wes Anderson's the only one who can really pull it off really well.
Oh yeah. Wes Anderson.
Yeah, Wes Anderson, just so I'm not confusing anyway, he's not an animator, but if you've ever seen a Wes Anderson movie, like Moonrise Kingdom.
Or Life Aquatic.
Or the newest one that came out,
Grand Budapest Hotel.
He shoots all of his shots like a stage show.
Yeah.
Like a really flat, head-on shot. And it's done for comedy.
It's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable because every character in his movies are uncomfortable.
Are so awkward. But it has to be done right. Like, Wes Anderson does it right, but not everybody can do that.
Which is another interesting thing. The rules are made so that they're meant to be broken, but there's a way to break them. So that you're doing it wrong, but it's still right. It's interesting. It's something confusing, and it's kind of something that you kind of have to figure out for your own. Like, for yourself. You have to figure out what works.
Yeah. So, so the next step of animation is straight ahead action and pose to pose.
See, this one is a little interesting because this one is actually an animation technique.
Yeah, and it's actually two different techniques, but they can both be used in the same animation.
The most common one is pose to pose. We'll start with that one.
Okay, so pose to pose is creating major keyframes. When you're animating something, even in 3D, you create the keyframes of this is the main action that the character is doing, and then you move them to the next main action that they're going to be doing. You have to be a big shot to be a key animator.
Right.
The people who have to follow up Glenn Keane.
Yeah, okay. Glenn Keane is one of our favorite animators all the time. He animated Ariel from Little Mermaid at Disney, and he also did The Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
He did way more than that, but those are just some main projects that he did, and the other animators just hated cleaning up after Glenn Keane.
Because he drew so many action lines.
So, and actually, Glenn Keane is a great example of a key animator, because he was a big shot and probably one of the, in my opinion, the best artist in the world.
Yeah.
But here you go, here's straight ahead. The other option is straight ahead animation. If you have a quick animation, something that's really fast, or something that is can be done in a quick motion, you're probably going to animate straight ahead.
Just doing shot 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, so no key poses.
I hope we didn't lose you guys. Straight ahead to pose is a really confusing one if you're not an animation major. So we'll move on to another one just so that we...
Yeah, like I said, this is all learned.
Yep. And now follow through and overlapping actions is the next one. And it kind of follows through through with anticipation. But this one, follow through and overlapping action, gives a character weight. And it's like physics. Follows physics.
Imagine you're throwing a baseball. Okay, so when you're throwing a baseball, you have to... The anticipation of that action is holding the ball back behind your head. then you have the action of actually throwing the ball. The overlap and follow through is not just, you don't just throw the ball and your arm stops forward. Your arm continues to flow down
to your side,
down to, and even probably back.
Let's do another exercise. Pretend like you're throwing a baseball. And so when the ball leaves your hand, that's the animation, but the follow through and overlap is when you follow
it
down
after it leaves your hand and your hand continues to move.
Yeah. This was one of the biggest ones that I have problem. Like if we use our example of Monte Oom, he doesn't have any weight in his characters. They all kind of just like float around.
Yeah, they all float around.
And nothing seems like it has physics to it. Like everybody just kind of like when he does a sword fight, there's no clangs of the swords. They just kind of stop when they hit each other. And that's one of the biggest ones that I have an issue with him.
Yeah, and then
animation, not him.
That's one of the easier ones to kind of understand, especially when somebody's running. Like if you're doing a run animation, but then you have to make someone stop, you have to follow their clothes, move
and stuff like that. Their hair.
Yeah, hair, and that actually also goes into secondary motion, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, slow in and slow out will be our next one.
This is probably the easiest one for people to understand, which is if you've ever
once again, you don't just stop when you're moving. Like if you're walking and you come to a stop, you kind of like lean into your stop and then you have to kind of rebalance yourself.
And imagine a camera. If you have a camera in a shot, and the camera is moving, panning or trucking, whichever one, but it's stopping, the camera doesn't just stop. That's uncomfortable. That makes things really uncomfortable. You have to ease in and have a gradual slow down in order that's slow in and slow out. And this also occurs not just to stopping, but also going. So if you're slowing into something, you're moving slow, moving fast, and then moving slow. Think of the ball bounce again.
Or think of a car. When you hit the acceleration on a car, it doesn't just go. And then when you brake, it doesn't just stop. It slows in. That's the best way to think about it is a car. Next up, we have arcs, which is in everything.
Yeah. So here's the deal, guys. Everything, regardless of what you believe, moves in arcs. Think of a bridge, an old-fashioned stone bridge that's made with an arcing pattern of the stones to make it to hold it its structural integrity. Every single action moves in arcs. Think of the baseball again. When you're throwing a baseball, your arm...
The ball goes straight, but your arm has to go over.
Your arm goes over and out and around in a circle. When you're running, your arms are moving in an arcing motion, circular patterns.
Yeah, you're going straight, but your body is moving up and down like an arc.
When think of the bouncing ball. This not just a bouncing ball going up and down, but the second animation you learn is the ball bouncing in arcs. Where it starts as a bounce and it arcs and the ball gets lower and lower and lower until it stops.
Yeah.
So that's basically what arcs is.
Arcs is everything.
Everything moves in arcs.
All right. Secondary action. We've talked about this one because it goes hand in hand with a ton of things. Secondary action is basically when like your fingers move when you're talking. Like let's say we got an Italian person and they're talking. Their secondary action is moving their hands.
Well, yeah, while they're talking, their hands are moving. Or even...
That's a stereotype, people.
Yeah, or even when maybe somebody's talking and the wind is blowing, their shirt is moving, their hair is moving. Mm-hmm. That's secondary action. It's an action that does not overplay the main action.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, or obviously we're talking about a talking scene. When people are talking, that's the main action. But the secondary action, which is the non-distracting action that does not detract away from the main action, would be either their clothes moving, their hands are doing some sort of nervous twitch, or
which you don't see in anime a lot at all.
Yeah, there's
talking heads are just talking heads. They actually even make like scenes where like when hair is blowing in the wind or something like that. That's its own scene. You know, when talking heads happen. You see it more. You see secondary actions more nowadays because there's a lot more budget that goes into anime. Yep. But it used to not happen at all.
So moving on to the next major, I mean, obviously that one is pretty obvious that we just talked about. But timing is a huge thing. This is something that takes a really, really long time to learn. I had a teacher whose name is Barry Temple. Barry was a Disney animator. He worked on a lot of major productions, like Beauty and the Beast. And
A Christmas Carol with Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, which, fun fact, you can see Barry Temple's name on one of the headstones
in the graveyard.
I love Barry. He was one of my favorite, because he was a ninja. Like, you'd be working, and all of a sudden you'd stop and like look behind you, and there was Barry. But Barry was like, "Oh my gosh, Barry's behind me!" And he'd just be watching you animate, but he was so quiet, and he'd like, you know, he'd talk to you in a soft tone, like, "Man, that's really good. Yeah, good job. Yeah." And then he's like, "Maybe if you just add one frame to that, it'll make it feel so much better." Barry was probably one of the biggest teachers who had the greatest understandings of timing I have ever seen.
It's really hard to learn, because I mean, like, I was reading the book The Soul of Anime, which is a really excellent book if you're into just Japanese culture in general. But there's a interview with Mamoru Hosoda in it when he was making Summer Wars, and they were talking about his storyboards. And when he was making storyboards, he had on each storyboard frame, like, there was a conversation or there was action, like the scene in the beginning where King Cosmo was doing his fights. They were saying, this scene is going to last 4 seconds, or this scene is going to last 2 seconds. And that just, like thinking about when you look at something, you have to act out every single thing that happens, so you know, like, you have to film yourself so you know how long a punch is going to take, like how long it takes to punch somebody.
Yeah, guys, some people might think that animation is somebody just knows how to animate. The answer is no. People use reference for this stuff. They film themselves doing the animation, they act this stuff out, and then they animate over it. Some people will be like, oh, that's cheating. It's not cheating.
Reference for everything.
Yeah, you always use reference.
One of my favorite things is the movie Rango with Johnny Depp about the lizard. Oh my, it's one of my favorites.
It's really funny.
They filmed live action that entire movie before they animated it. So Johnny Depp actually did all the animations that he did for when he was the lizard Rango. You know, they filmed the entire thing, and then they gave that whole production to the animators to make it an animated film.
Now here's the thing. Now we're gonna move on to exaggeration,
which is probably one of my favorites, because I love exaggerating.
Now we can talk definitely about anime.
Hiroyuki Mashi is the king of exaggeration.
Oh my goodness. And almost anything that he did for Gainax.
Yeah, even when he was just the animation director on Fooly Cooly, he didn't like anime anything, but like all those scenes were his influence, like to have those exaggerations where like you have the super D fist going into like the face of an enemy or something like that,
and the distortion of the faces when they get punched.
Yeah,
like, ooh, like
Gurren Lagann does it the best, I think.
Like, I think if anybody understands animation, they understand what exaggeration is.
Yeah.
Because this one is really, really, really hard to mistake.
Going back to Tex Avery with like the wolf character with his eyes bugging out.
Take a normal action that people do every single day and make it explode.
Not really, we're not Michael Bay here.
Yeah. And also put it this way, exaggeration doesn't always have to be
over the top.
Exaggeration is put into every single action that you do normally. So, hey, did you just throw that baseball? Well, don't just throw that baseball. Really,
like,
beef up that action and show it in the body of the pitcher to throw that baseball.
Get his head in there. Make him like jolt his head forward. You know, that really, really show that he's throwing it really fast. You know, it
gives things power. Really want to give things power. So after exaggeration, the next principle of animation, number 11, we only have one more to go, is solid drawing. Yes, solid drawing is a major thing, especially even with talking about anime. Very different than the last step of anime, or principle of animation that we're going to talk about next. Solid drawing is actually having good drawing.
Yeah, just make sure that everything is
correct. Now, because in the world of animation, we have this thing called twinning.
We're not talking about us.
Yeah, we're not talking about me and John.
Ah!
Where you have straight up and down, man. as we called him. We always called him Straight Up and Down Man, where you have a character standing there with his arms to his side, like, hi guys, like, oh, like, here's, and basically both sides of the body are doing the same exact thing at the same time.
The best fix for fixing Straight Up and Down Man, or twinning, is if you look at characters in visual novels. Visual novel characters are never, ever in a twinning position. They always have good staging, and they always have great solid drawings, because even their poses are really weird. Like, sometimes their hands are doing things, and it's like, people don't stand like that, but it looks good, you know?
Which brings us to our final principle of animation, which is appeal.
Appeal is the best.
Now, appeal and solid drawing sometimes go hand in hand, but appeal is one of the major things that goes for anime, and that's because I feel like anime because they still do animation correctly in a certain sense. They do a lot cheaper, but appeal is one of the most important things for anime.
You don't even need animation to do appeal.
Yeah.
Just draw pictures.
Appeal is exactly what it sounds like. Appealing. Is it appealing? Do I like to look at this? Does my brain enjoy this? Does my body enjoy this? it's creating something that helps make the viewer interested in what they're looking at.
For example, if you don't like the way a character looks, you might not like the show.
Now, and that's not always what it is. And because appeal doesn't have to do with sympathy. You don't have to sympathize with a character for a character to be appealing. You know why? Because villains are appealing.
Yeah, you love to hate them.
I love villains. Villains are awesome. I think that's another problem, is sometimes there are crappy villains.
Yeah, if you hate a villain so much that you get angry at them, you love that villain.
Yeah, that like a character that you love to hate is a good villain.
Are you confused yet?
And that is appeal. So appeal goes into good character design.
Moe.
Charisma of a character. Yeah, moe is a type of appeal.
It even goes into the writing of a character.
Yeah, so a character's personality. It actually doesn't have to do with a lot with animation, but the design of the character, or overall design, not just physical feature design, but their backstory, their personality, how they interact with other characters.
Are they relatable? You know?
Yeah. And the way that it does appeal to animation is how they're animated. Does the appeal of their animation make sense? Is it comfortable the way they're moving?
Yeah.
Does it
seem real? Does it seem like it can physically be done?
Yeah, can you relate to that character? That is appeal.
It also allows you to character crush.
Yeah, which is another thing that, hey, we're writing a panel on. And finally, I think the last thing I'm going to talk about with appeal is the pose. Posing. Again, Straight Up and Down Man. Yeah. Twinning. You don't do that. You know who figured out appeal? The Romans Romans and Greeks. Think of their statues, their architecture, their weight of their characters. Nobody is straight up and down, man. They are.
They're all action heroes.
They're all standing in action pose. Think about the statue of David. I'm actually standing. I'm actually physically standing up doing this, but obviously that's bad for radio. But I'm gonna do it anyway. When a character has their hips moved out,
we're gonna do our final exercise. Everybody, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up, most likely you're putting your weight on one leg, not both legs. And that's the thing for balance. You're balancing yourself as a character. Usually your head is matched up with one of your feet, not in between both of your feet. And your shoulders are tilted and your hips are tilted the opposite way
of your shoulders.
So your body has a curve to it.
There's arcs again.
Yep, there's the arcs again. So this is just all things that we've learned through school, all things that can be applied to animation shows. Anime is very, very good at posing. Because they can't animate all the time, characters are always standing in an interesting pose. Yeah. Not always. Sometimes they do have straight up and down man in anime, unfortunately.
It happens.
But their character designs kind of make up for that, you know?
So hopefully that guy, and I know that
I hope this wasn't boring.
And we gotta say, if you've made it to the end, this was not boring for me and Jonathan. Me and Jonathan were like super excited.
We're having a blast. I don't know if you guys are having a crappy time.
You guys might be asleep by now, but we don't care.
we're having an awesome time. You guys can go away.
So again, this all spiked from watching Ruby, because obviously the animation isn't up to par. I know you guys are probably doing the best you can with Poser. Monty, I know you started with Dead Fantasy, and you're completely self-taught, but these are all very, very, very important to what we're talking about. And if you guys have complaints and you wanna tell us, like, oh, show us your work, we will. Just ask us and we'll send you work that we've done, animations that I've done. Obviously, you've seen the intro to the Wicked Anime, to any of our Wicked Anime episodes. That's not my best. I do have different things. I have shows that I've worked on, any kind of thing. If you're interested, just let me know.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It will be fun.
So it's time to move on to some fan service.
Obviously, we've already talked about Scott's email, who recommended to us Cheese Sweet House. Thanks, man. I am watching Cheese Sweet House right now, and it is sweet. Woo!
Let's move on to some. Let's see what we got for comments on
the SoundCloud. On the cloud. Episode 45, the great.
In respect to our new policy where we just have people, every time that glitch says, I hate you, Dylan, just respond, I love you, Big Bad Shadow Man stepped up for the first time to take care of that for us. Thank you, Big Bad Shadow Man. Gary actually left us a lot of comments on our last episode for episode 45 saying that I'm loving Barakamon. He weighed in on our comments on Barakamon and how awesome it is. And he says that he has an urge to make Kanemon.
Now, he also made a comment about... He says that my spoiler protection is out of date because of Avatar: The Last Airbender being out for so long that I can no longer stop people from saying no spoilers. I still haven't watched it.
You gotta get on that, man.
I do, but when do I have time? And then another thing that he asked was, when are we gonna sell Wicked Anime T-shirts? Great question. Well,
soon. Hopefully.
We're hoping maybe soon. I mentioned that the cafe press that we're building. We're still working on that kind of stuff. All I have to do is submit some personal information, but because of all the security things that are going on around the internet, I'm not sure how far I want to go along with posting that personal security information. But we do have a cafe press with a lot of sweet products that you guys can buy. Hopefully that will be up very, very soon, unless you guys know of an alternate store. If you guys know of an alternate online store that is commonly used and is safe, please let us know, and we will throw all of our designs up for you guys to purchase.
Yeah.
So that should be it, guys.
I guess it wasn't as much as we thought.
I guess, whatever.
It's been a couple weeks, so we thought that we had a lot more than we did. But you know what? Keep sending us stuff anyways, because we like hearing from you guys.
we happen to like you guys.
even if it's just like a comment on our page, or if it's like whether or not you're on something because you're worried that we didn't say too much about Sailor Mars.
Yeah.
We'll send you Sailor Mars pics. Thanks, Keto. also, we get, you know, YouTube comments all the time. Maybe
bad comments.
Yeah, maybe you disagree with Andrew with the fact that you're weird if you like incest.
Hint, hint. Go to the video of my ending to Ori Emo and go read the angry comment. It's really funny.
It's really long too. They wrote you an essay.
Yeah, it actually made me smile a little bit. Like at first when they sent me the angry comment, I was like, oh man, this sucks. And then so I went back and I read it, and after I read it, I was smiling by the end of the comic. I was like, oh.
Well, my favorite thing was not your opinion annoys me, you annoy me.
Yeah, they were like,
you are annoying, Andrew.
The comment starts off with, you annoy me to no end. Read it from there. I implore you, go read that awesome comment. It is so funny.
It's wonderful.
All right, guys, that is it for the Wicked Anime Podcast. Here are some shameless plugs for you. We are obviously... If you want to join in our conversation about animation,
Maybe, I mean, you guys don't have to agree with us on anything as far as Ruby goes, but everything we taught you about the 12 principles of animation is factual. So if you guys have an interest in animation like we do, let us know. We will talk to you. Maybe you want to hear an episode about Western animation. Oh, which we did do before.
We did do a while ago, but we didn't talk about, like, animation.
Yeah.
We talked about shows we like.
Maybe you guys are interested in hearing more about what can be done in the world of animation. Anything like that, just email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com. That's wickedanimereviews@gmail.com. You can also find us at facebook.com/wickedanime, where we make frequent posts about funny things that we find on the internet, videos that are coming up. Some videos that are coming up are our panel video from Anime Boston, and some other cool things that we're interested in. We haven't had time because we have full-time jobs. We're sorry. We're getting to it.
Calm down.
Which brings us to YouTube.com, which is our main hub of videos, where you can find us at YouTube.com/WickedAnimeReviews, where we have video reviews, informational videos, anything that's awesome from us, our main show. You can find us at NerdyShow.com, where you can find our videos as well as our podcast, if you're not already listening to the podcast on there. And you can also find us at iTunes.com. Where you can rate and review our show.
We got a couple now, yeah!
Yeah, we do have a couple now.
You guys are awesome.
You can find us at soundcloud.com/wickedanime, where all of our podcasts are on there. We're ranking up the hours. You can watch them or listen to them all straight ahead. And then finally, you can find us now newly at twitter.com, where you can tweet us at YoWickedAnime. Just tweet us, YoWickedAnime, and say something weird and send us weird pictures. We have gotten pictures. That's another thing we didn't talk about in Phantom.
Yeah, send us pictures of your of giant bugs that you found.
We can talk about, because we started a crazy kaiju conversation with our fan Mike. Mike sent us, or Jonathan took a picture of a bee, how he killed a kaiju.
And a piter.
Yeah, and a spider, that's right. And Mike commented back, here's a kaiju at my house. And we were like, oh, kaiju, reset the clock. We have fun on Twitter, guys. We really, really appreciate your time. So thank you for all the fan response. We look forward to it. We love hanging out with you guys on the interwebs, and we'll continue to do it. And we're really hoping to get more videos and more content out for you. Finally, go to Tumbles, where we haven't tumbled in a long time.
We
do tumble every once in a while. So thank you guys for all the support that you've given us. We hope you still like the Wicked Anime Podcast, and we hope you keep listening. And soon enough, we'll become internet famous, and you'll get videos and podcasts all the time.
Full-time job. Quit my job. Hashtag
Wicked Anime. Boston Bruins.
Yo.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the Wicked Anime Podcast this week. We will see you in a couple weeks again. Where we'll have another awesome show for you guys. Now we're gonna sign off the only way we know how.
Okay, bye!
Bye!
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Okay, so first comment is by Berto Elcon, or
Berto Icon.
What? Or
it's
Berto Elcon. Berto Elcon.
And not Berto Icon?
No. Oh, maybe it looks like an L, like a lowercase L. Berto Elcon.
Could be like in capital I, though.
All right.
Good start.
So he says, or they say, I should say, because we're
not going to make that mistake again.
We're not going to make that mistake again. is Wicked A is Wicked A. Where they say, Wicked Anime is Wicked Awesome, and one out of one listeners found this review helpful. And then our buddy Garrier says, Wicked A is great. It says, this is a really fun and informative show. Thank you that you believe that we're informative.
we pretend.
Yeah. Not only do you talk about, or do they talk about a wide variety of anime, but they often examine features and categories in depth. I usually come away with at least one new show that I want to watch, which is great. Because
seeing that we talk about the same shows all the time.
No, and the fact is that they keep talking about like our fans. You guys keep sending us shows that we want to watch all the time too,
which
is awesome.
We watch and then we tell you about what they are. Which we try to, anyways.
Yeah,
we're still far behind. We have like a huge list of shows that we haven't even touched yet.
I know.
Thanks for listening to the Wicked Anime Podcast. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling friends, rating and reviewing on iTunes, shopping at nerdyshow.com/store, or directly donating to the network. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. To find out how you and your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more episodes of the Wicked Anime Podcast, as well as other fine programs, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes Store, and for the latest news, follow us on your favorite social networks. We're glad to be your home for authentic nerdy entertainment.